Welcome to the East County Magazine Live Radio Show, the voice of East County, bringing you the hottest news and coolest events from the communities of San Diego's East County. We're your community radio, representing the public interest, not special interests. Broadcasting from the heart of East County in Descanso with your host, Miriam Raftery.
This is Miriam Raftery with the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, the network for social justice. Today, we open our show with some national news stories, including a bill to protect access to birth control that's passed the House of Representatives and is headed to the Senate. It's supported by San Diego's four Democratic congressional members, but was opposed by Congressman Daryl Issa. Then, hear about a protest at the U.S. Supreme Court over abortion rights, where Congresswoman Sarah Jacobs and others were arrested for civil disobedience. Assemblymember Akilah Weber has announced funding for infrastructure projects in her district, including San Diego and East County. Hear what's been approved in the state budget on today's show. President Joe Biden has been diagnosed with COVID-19 as cases surge nationwide due to a new and highly contagious variant. A fund has been set up to help the family of an Alpine mother who died in a vehicle crash while taking her two young daughters to a dance recital. East County Magazine has picked up three more journalism awards from the Society of Professional Journalists, bringing our total to 140 major awards, and we congratulate our winners, Henry Magala, Elijah McKee, and Miriam Raftery. In Lemon Grove, a judge has ruled in favor of homeowners and found the city liable for damages caused by a pipeline that's caused sinkholes in residents' backyards. Monarch butterflies have been declared endangered internationally, but the U.S. government has not yet provided endangered species status. Hear how you can help restore monarch populations on today's show. And our newsmaker interview today is with Pam Meisner with the Water Conservation Garden, better known as Miss Smarty Plants. She heads up educational programs for the garden at Cuyamaca College, and she'll be talking about efforts to save monarch butterflies from extinction, including locally. El Cajon has approved a pilot program to allow nurses to triage calls to 911. It's called a Nurse Navigator Program, and we'll have details. Then on the Yonder Report from Public News Service, we'll have stories impacting rural America. We'll also have a report on a judge's approval to place a sexually violent predator in Borrego Springs. Plus, hear about a California ballot measure to fund art in our state's public schools. So stay tuned for today's edition of the East County Magazine Radio Show, where East County matters. This is East County Magazine's Capitol Report, bringing you the latest news and newsmakers from our nation's capital. San Diego Congresswoman Sarah Jacobs presided over the House floor on July 31st during passage of the Right to Contraception Act. East County's Republican, Congressman Daryl Issa, voted against the bill to protect women's access to birth control, as did the vast majority of Republicans in the House. The measure passed by a 228-195 margin and now goes to the Senate for consideration. Congresswoman Jacobs is a co-sponsor of the bill introduced by Congresswoman Kathleen Manning in response to Supreme Court Justice Clarence Thomas's call for the High Court to reconsider Griswold v. Connecticut. That's the landmark 1965 ruling which declared states could not outlaw birth control access for married couples and legalized birth control access. Jacobs gave an impassioned floor speech in support of the measure, which was also backed by San Diego's other three Democratic representatives, Scott Peters, Mark Levine, and Juan Vargas. During the debate, Congresswoman Jacobs provided personal insights. Here's what she had to say.
This bill could not be more important, because for me and for tens of millions of Americans, these threats from Justice Thomas and the Supreme Court to take away our right to contraception are not abstract. I've lived my entire life with this constitutional right to contraception, and it's a right I've exercised for decades. Whether it was the birth control pills I used when I was a teenager to address debilitating cramps, the IUD I've relied on for years, or the Plan B I've used at times that was thankfully available over the counter when I needed it. I'm probably the first person ever to speak about using Plan B on the House floor, and I know I'm the first person in at least 35 years to talk about my period here. But you know what? We should be talking about it. We should be talking about periods and birth control and the health care that millions of Americans need for our everyday lives. Because this is not a side issue that only affects some people. This is a kitchen table issue. The decision of how and if and when to grow a family are decisions that are personal and private and should never be decided by the Supreme Court or Congress. It's a decision that is fundamental to our autonomy, our agency, and our ability to control our own lives. As a young woman, reproductive health care is my health care. And I'm so grateful that today we will take a step to codifying that access into law. I urge my colleagues to support this bill.
Congresswoman Sarah Jacobs has been a tireless advocate for reproductive rights throughout her first term in Congress. She has co-sponsored the Women's Health Protection Act and introduced the My Body, My Data Act to protect privacy of reproductive health data. She is also a co-sponsor of the Access to Infertility Treatment and Care Act to expand insurance coverage for a full range of reproductive and fertility health care. Congresswoman Jacobs has publicly shared her personal experience in the past of freezing her eggs and her efforts to expand fertility and reproductive health care. By contrast, Congressman Daryl Issa has been a staunch opponent of reproductive rights. He signed an amicus brief urging the Supreme Court to overturn Roe v. Wade and eliminate abortion rights for women. He voted against a House bill that would restore abortion rights, and now has shown himself to be an extremist on women's rights by voting against assuring women access to birth control, such as birth control pills or IUDs to prevent unwanted pregnancies. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, the Network for Social Justice, this is Miriam Raftery.
This is John Tidwell with a Capitol report. San Diego Congresswoman Sarah Jacobs was among 17 representatives arrested on July 19th during a peaceful protest outside the U.S. Supreme Court. The group was demonstrating against the court's controversial ruling that overturned Roe v. Wade and allows states to ban or restrict abortions. Jacobs, a Democrat, posted on social media that she was proud to join my colleagues and take a stand for reproductive rights. Being arrested won't deter us from this fight. Video showed protesters sitting down in the street in front of the high court. Capitol Police have said the demonstrators were arrested for obstructing traffic after several warnings. A total of 35 people were arrested, including the 17 congressional members. The demonstrators wore green bandanas, symbolic of reproductive rights. Washington, D.C. police customarily detain protesters in engaging in nonviolent civil disobedience briefly, charge them with an infraction, assess a small fine, and release them hours later. Polls show that the vast majority of Americans oppose the High Court's abortion ruling, which allows states to ban abortions even when a woman's life or health is at stake, such as with ectopic pregnancies or a failed miscarriage where sepsis infection is a danger. States can, and several have, also prohibited abortion access for victims of rape or children impregnated due to incest. By finding that the Constitution does not contain a right to privacy, the High Court also opened the door to future decisions that could ban birth control, gay marriage, and other protected rights. Congresswoman Jacobs has introduced a bill to protect birth control access and voted for bills to protect gay rights and abortion access. But it appears doubtful whether these bills will make it through the Senate, where Republicans can likely block action via a filibuster. On her Facebook page, constituents weighed in. Nearly all voiced support, with a handful opposed. Jennifer West Dielson wrote that she is proud of the Congresswoman, adding, "The fight for women's rights was my fight. I am now 1 year from 80 and furious that reproductive rights have been removed. Keep up the fight, dear Sarah." Bonnie Lang called Jacobs' arrest good trouble, a reference to the late Congressman John Lewis, who was arrested at civil rights protests that he called good trouble. Cindy Hayden called for the congressional members to be arrested in large numbers, along with doctors and nurses, to challenge the High Court's ruling, which she called unjust and a result of religious tyranny. But some viewed things differently. Audrey Andujar posted, "Though I support protests for reproductive rights, I do not support improper leadership in obstruction of traffic or other laws at that level of representation." And Mark Doyle suggested the Congresswoman enjoyed white privilege for being quickly processed and released. "If you were a person of color, you would have been violently detained and held for months without bail," he speculated. As for Congresswoman Jacobs, she called the ruling by the conservative majority on the High Court one of the most destructive, regressive, and shameful decisions made by the Supreme Court in our nation's history, and justified her actions this way: "As one of the few women of reproductive age in Congress, this attempt to strip people of their bodily autonomy is personal."
Assemblymember Akilah Weber held a press conference Tuesday to announce that she has secured over $51 million in state funds for projects in her 79th Assembly District, which includes San Diego and East County communities. The funds are in the state budget signed into law by Governor Gavin Newsom. The press conference was held at the Martin Luther King Recreation Center, where Dr. Weber was joined by elected officials from La Mesa and San Diego, accepting checks for their communities, as well as representatives from local agencies. The projects include proposals to increase our local water supply, make infrastructure upgrades, build a library, help refugees, improve safety and access to local recreational spaces, and more. Assemblywoman Weber stated, "This is a tremendous win for the families in our community." Specifically, the budget wins in Weber's 79th Assembly District include $2 million to the Padre Dam Municipal Water District to create a new source of water supply for East San Diego County residents through the Advanced Water Purification Project in partnership with Helix Water, El Cajon, and San Diego County. $3 million to the county and the Partnership for the Advancement of New Americans for a refugee and cultural hub. $2 million to the City of San Diego for upgrades to the Martin Luther King Jr. Community Pool, $600,000 to the City of San Diego for upgrades to the Mountain View Park Sport Court and ADA accessibility, $500,000 to the City of La Mesa for increased mobility access around schools and parks, $20 million to build a new Oak Park Library on 54th Street, $4 million for Clay Park upgrades in Rolando Village, $1 million to San Diego Unified School District's Earth Lab Open Air Climate Park near Joyous Creek in southeastern San Diego, and $2 million to the Central San Diego Black Chamber of Commerce for the Urban Business Resource Center. Assemblymember Weber welcomes residents in District 79 to continue to partner with her in identifying budget priorities for the district. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Henry Migala.
President Joe Biden tested positive for COVID-19 on Thursday. According to a White House briefing, he's fully vaccinated and twice boosted and experiencing mild symptoms. The 79-year-old president has begun taking Paxlovid, an antiviral medication effective during the first several days after symptoms appear. According to the White House physician, these symptoms include runny nose, fatigue, and dry cough. The president's last negative test was Tuesday. The positive result was found during routine testing for the president. All contacts since Tuesday will be notified, per the White House press secretary. Consistent with CDC guidelines, he'll be isolating at the White House and continue to carry out all of his duties during that time. He's been in contact with members of the White House staff by phone and will participate in his planned meetings at the White House. A press release from the White House press secretary, that's Karine Jean-Pierre, set dates. Consistent with White House protocol for positive COVID cases, President Biden has stated that he feels fine and is continuing his work. He released names of several key nominees to federal agencies on Thursday, among other actions. Biden is not the first U.S. leader to contract COVID-19. Former President Donald Trump was hospitalized with the disease in 2020 and reportedly tested positive shortly before his debate with Joe Biden, though he did not disclose the results. Vice President Kamala Harris tested positive in April, but reportedly had no symptoms. She has thus far tested negative, though she was in close contact with Biden on Tuesday during a presidential briefing. Harris has not changed her schedule and on Thursday met with North Carolina legislative leaders at the White House to discuss reproductive rights. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Miriam Raftery.
35-year-old Bonnie Baum Roth was taking her young daughters to a dance competition in Long Beach on July 15th when she lost control of her SUV, which plummeted down an embankment on I-8 near Alpine. She was ejected from the vehicle and died at the scene, according to the California Highway Patrol. With gasoline spilled across the lane and the vehicle at risk of bursting into flames, two Good Samaritans ran to the crash and rescued Roth's daughters, 3-year-old Roxy and 9-year-old Moxie, before emergency crews arrived. The family is hoping to find the people who saved the girls and thank them. Roth's mother, Cheryl Baum, called the rescuers heroes in an interview with 10 News, adding, "We can't thank you enough for being so brave." Cheryl Baum has started a GoFundMe campaign to help the family. So far, more than $49,000 has been raised. You can find a link on our website at East County Magazine. Baum wrote on GoFundMe that she started the site to make sure that her sister's young daughters and son are taken care of, calling the tragic accident an earth-shattering loss to the huge community of people that Bonnie touched in her short amount of time here. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is John Tidwell.
You are listening to KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, broadcasting from the desert to the sea.
East County Magazine continues to be recognized for our high-quality reporting on news in the public interest in San Diego's inland region. On July 21st, the Society of Professional Journalists in San Diego held their annual Journalism Awards presentation. East County Magazine received 3 awards, bringing our total number of professional journalism awards to 140 since our inception in 2008. The latest awards, all for daily reporting, include a second place in the education category for an article by Henry Migala and Miriam Raftery on protests over school vaccine and mask mandates, an article that also included an interview with a top doctor at Rady Children's Hospital addressing parents' concerns and risks of COVID-19 to children. Elijah McKee received a second place award in the multicultural reporting category for his coverage of the Helping El Cajon Refugees Group, assisting newly arrived Afghan refugees in El Cajon, also highlighting the urgent need for additional resources. Migala and Raftery also earned a third place award for their series on the continuing battle waged by East County communities fighting to block placement of sexually violent predators in neighborhoods with children. You can read all of these stories and more at eastcountymagazine.org. Nonprofit public interest news.
After a 2-year campaign, a group of neighbors has won a lawsuit against the city of Lemon Grove. Superior Court Judge Joel Wolfile has ruled the city of Lemon Grove must take responsibility for repairing a treacherous backyard storm drain pipe. But the city has filed objections with the court. The pipe is corroded, split, and has been spouting runoff water from nearby streets into backyards of the Farson and Legg family homes. The water has eroded land around the pipes, causing sinkholes that pose a risk of injury to young children living in both households. The problem is clear, but the question of who must solve it, a cash-strapped city or its residents, has cost each side around $500,000 in legal fees to resolve in court. The cost to repair the storm drain could run more than $800,000. The Farson family set up a GoFundMe account after costs surpassed their savings. Taylor Farson posted on the page, "We are not the first homeowners that this has happened to, and surely won't be the last," facing potentially even costlier damage to their homes. The families believe their cause was worth the fight. They hope a court victory will help other community members facing similar problems. The pipe is part of the city's storm water system along Amber Place and Cerdral Place, but the city has denied responsibility, claiming it does not own, report, or control the pipe that caused the sinkholes. Sean Farson told NBC7 that it's been terrifying with every rainfall to know that more damage could occur, adding, "We fear that our home value is being washed away with the storm." The judge's ruling found that municipal oversight of the pipe is implied and that lack of action by the city constitutes liability. Judge Wolfile wrote in the decision that Lemon Grove chose to adopt a wait-until-it-breaks plan of maintenance to save on the costs of monitoring and repairing its aging, failing drainage system, adding, "The damages to plaintiff's properties were caused by the inherent risk of defendant's maintenance plan. Plaintiffs should not be expected to shoulder the burden alone." Wolfile's ruling marks a major victory for the Farsons and Legs, who jointly filed the lawsuit almost 2 full years ago and have been pushed to the brink of bankruptcy as a result, Rosalinda Legg told CBS 8. The Farsons say that the city initially told them that any lawsuit would be thrown out by a judge. The city of Lemon Grove, which won't comment on pending litigation, filed official objections on July 14th to the Superior Court's ruling. In the document, the city claims the court's decision is too ambiguous and rejects the idea that their responsibility of the pipes in question is implied, among other objections raised. The court will hear arguments for all objections, as well as schedule the next phase of the trial, which could include financial damages, on August 12th. If the judge rejects the city's objections, it remains to be seen whether the city will provide a financial settlement to the families or appeal the decision. Sean Farson spoke at the July 19th City Council meeting to plead with the city to put an end to our suffering and not drag this out any further, adding, "Instead, I'm asking that you work with us on a settlement so that we can all move forward." Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is John Tidwell.
Now it's time for the Green Scene Report, highlighting energy, environmental, and sustainability issues in our community. This is Miriam Raftery with a Green Scene Report. Monarch butterflies have been declared an internationally endangered species by the International Union for Conservation of Nature. The group has placed monarchs on their red list and warns that the beloved orange and black butterflies could become extinct unless actions are taken to protect them. The organization estimates the native population of monarch butterflies has shrunk by between 22% and 72% over the last decade, and the western population has declined by 99.9% between the 1980s and 2021, putting it at the greatest risk of extinction. The U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, however, has not yet added monarch butterflies to the federal endangered species list. Monarch butterflies migrate over 2,300 miles every year from Canada to Mexico. Groves of trees covered in fluttering orange butterflies have long been a spectacular sight for western coastal residents along the migration route. Reasons for the drastic decline in monarch populations have been attributed to climate change, loss of habitat, and use of glyphosate herbicides on crops such as soybeans and corn. Alarmed by the decline, many backyard gardeners have tried to help by planting milkweed, the host plant required for monarchs to reproduce. But now California has banned a species of non-native milkweed over concerns that spores are harmful to the butterflies. To save the monarch butterflies from extinction, experts at the Xerces Society recommend these steps be taken. Protect and manage wintering, summer breeding, and fall migration sites for monarchs, especially in California. Restore breeding and migratory habitat, and protect monarchs and their habitat from pesticides. You can help by planting native milkweed in your yard or garden. Native milkweed is available at many local nurseries and at the Water Conservation Garden at Cuyamaca College here in East County. Be sure the milkweed is a variety native to California, however, not a non-native species. You can also write to your congressional representative to ask support for the Monarch Action, Recovery, and Conservation of Habitat Act.
The family of an elderly man missing in East County's mountain area are asking for help to find him. 76-year-old Terry Robert Hughes went for a walk near Pine Hills, south of Julian, on Monday, July 17th, and never came home. He was last seen wearing blue basketball shorts, a white t-shirt, and a hat. He is a white male with light hair standing over 6 feet tall, but walks hunched over, making him appear much shorter, around 5 feet 2 inches. Search and rescue crews have been combing roadways in the area and have asked for public help to locate the missing man. His family asked visitors to the Julian or Pine Hills areas to report any sightings of Terry Robert Hughes. Hikers in the vicinity are also asked to be on the lookout for the missing man, who has Parkinson's disease, according to his sister-in-law, Carolyn Miller. If you see anyone matching the description of the missing man or have any information on his whereabouts, please call 911. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Henry Migala.
Starting now, people contemplating suicide or families experiencing a mental health crisis can call 988 instead of 911 and get the help they need. The new 988 Suicide and Crisis Lifeline funnels callers to 13 mental health agencies across the state. Trained operators can connect people with suicide crisis counseling and mental health de-escalation counseling over the phone. Dr. Lisa Payan-Berlin with Parents Anonymous applauds the effort.
They're also trying to avoid police intervention. They want mental health intervention because when we've had police intervention, they're not trained to handle mental health problems and some tragedy happens.
Many jurisdictions, including L.A. County, will dispatch a mobile crisis team to the scene if appropriate. If a family issue is less urgent, the Lifeline has already begun passing callers along to the California Parent and Youth Helpline. That number, which people can call or text, is 855-427-2736, or you can live chat on their website, caparentyouthhelpline.org. Dr. Payan-Berlin says Parents Anonymous launched the California Parent and Youth Helpline in 2020 to connect families with trained counselors and free online support groups.
They call us because they want to talk to us as a parent, or they are having an emotional meltdown because the child is acting out, or they got kicked out of school, or they got arrested. You can call us.
The state of California is spending $20 million to support the 988 Lifeline in the Golden State. The new state budget funds the California Parent and Youth Helpline at $1.6 million a year for 3 years. For California News Service, I'm Suzanne Potter. Find our 8 trust indicators to support transparency and accuracy at publicnewsservice.org.
A free press is the foundation of our democracy. You can support independent public media for our region. Please support KNSJ by making a donation or a sustaining monthly pledge of any amount at www.knsj.org. We're your community radio station, KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, serving the San Diego border region from the mountains to the sea. That's www.knsj.org. The East County Magazine Show on KNSJ Radio is produced by the nonprofit Heartland Coalition. We're your community news. We reflect your interest, not special interest. You can get involved by volunteering, get trained to be a citizen journalist, and support East County Magazine at www.eastcountymagazine.org. And you can send your news tips and story ideas to editor@eastcountymagazine.org. Now stay tuned for part two of the East County Magazine radio show. Now, straight from the headlines, bringing you our latest top newsmakers. This is Miriam Raftery with the East County Magazine radio show on KNSJ 89.1 FM. Descanso. And today, my very special guest is Pam Meisner. She is the Director of Operations and Programs at the Water Conservation Garden at Cuyamaca College, also known as Miss Smarty Pants for the educational programs that she leads. So let's talk about monarch butterflies today.
Yeah, those beautiful monarch butterflies. It's kind of the regal butterfly that most people know. And unfortunately, just in this past week, it got put onto the endangered species list. It has been threatened, but it kind of went one step further and is now threatened. And from all of my contacts and research and colleagues, there's three main reasons for this.
We'll go into it in a minute. But first, I want to clarify that the federal government, the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, actually has not declared them an endangered species. However, they were declared internationally endangered by the International Union for Conservation of Nature. And they estimate that populations have declined internationally between 22 and 72% in recent years. And in the West, 99.9% decline, which is just shocking. I got to ask, Pam, why do you think that our own government, the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, has not yet declared monarchs endangered when they're endangered on a global level?
Well, there's a couple of my thoughts. One is that they're always the last one in, and they like to have a lot of research and data to justify placing them on that list. Mm-hmm. And the other reason is that it's not a good thing, you know, it's not happy news. Yeah. So they really kind of drag their feet. Their decline has been going on for so long that they're going to come aboard here really soon. They're going to come aboard here really soon because the data, the scientific data, shows it.
It's overwhelming, yeah. Well, let's hope so. Do you have any information on the state of monarch butterfly populations right here in San Diego County?
Yeah, we have our populations. It's very, very interesting. You know, that monarch butterfly is the one on the West Coast that comes down from Canada and comes all the way down into Mexico.
Yeah.
And then there's another branch.
They migrate over 2,300 miles. It's just amazing. Yeah. Have you ever seen it? The clouds of these orange and black butterflies flying down and nesting on stopping on the trees that are just covered in a sea of orange.
Yeah. And they do that in usually a 4 or 5 generation of butterflies that first come over. And nature is so amazing, Miriam. Can you believe it? That when a butterfly comes across the Canadian border into the United States, those eggs that are laid, when that butterfly emerges, they know to keep going south.
That's amazing.
And then the next ones know to keep going south. Yeah. It's just amazing.
We don't know how they know it, but they know that. It's astounding. So is the population of monarch butterflies in San Diego in as dire a situation as they are everywhere on the West Coast, or is there any
bright spot? You know what? Well, there's always brightness, because there are certain things that we can do to help increase that population.
Mm-hmm.
One is not using pesticides.
Right.
The other is making sure that they have an abundant food supply,
which is
of milkweed.
Milkweed, and I understand that California just this month has banned a type of non-native milkweed because the spores apparently are dangerous to the butterflies. So it's important to get native milkweed. Do they sell that or have that available at the water conservation?
We do. Yes, they do. And native milkweed is always the best. It's always the best. And there are many different types of milkweed. What was happening with the tropical milkweed that a lot of people in Southern California were planting is that with our climate and climate change, those blossoms were blossoming all year. And usually they die back in the winter.
Yeah.
Because butterfly season usually is from the end of April all the way through October.
So did that prevent them from migrating?
Pardon?
Did it prevent them from migrating? They just liked it here and stayed?
It prevents them from migrating. Mm-hmm. Yes.
So not a good thing really in the long run.
Right. And we do have them available at the Water Conservation Garden.
Yeah. Now you have a plant. You have a butterfly pavilion where people can actually come see butterflies, watch them hatch. You do releases. You're actually growing butterflies there, which is really cool. When can people, come and see that? When is the right time of year?
The right time of year is right now through the beginning of October.
Oh, wow. Very cool.
Usually. We are open from 9 to 4 every day but Monday. And you can call in or go to our website to arrange if you'd like a butterfly release, or if you just like to come into our pavilion and take a look around and kind of see the butterfly cycle, talk to one of our employees there, myself, anything like that.
And the website
we also, we're about a 5.5-acre garden, so you'll see them all around our garden.
It's just a gorgeous place to visit. And the website is thegarden.org, right?
Correct.
Yeah, thegarden.org. Now, you also do pollinator programs. You lead a bunch of children's programs in your Miss Smarty Plants character. Tell us about that. Sounds so fun.
Sure. Miss Smarty Plants is a character that encourages and inspires our youth and our adults to save the earth by all conservation methods. And we do it with fun. We do it with music. We use sign language. We do it in a way that, you know, sometimes as adults, when we're looking at the state of our world and just knowing that the monarchs are now onto the threatened list, it can become daunting and really depressing. So what we try to do is we try to inspire our youth to make the changes that are needed so that this doesn't happen again and doesn't continue.
Now, is climate change one of the factors in the monarch decline, in addition to pesticides that we've already talked about? Yeah.
Absolutely. Climate change. Our plants are used to blooming seasonally, certain plants, which, you know, affects the ecosystem.
Right.
And when that doesn't happen, as I mentioned previously about the tropical milkweed blooming all year, it does cause havoc on our ecosystem. So it is a big factor.
So the things you can do would be taking steps to reduce your impact on climate change, obviously not using pesticides like we've talked about. I understand that there's a bill before Congress that would help save monarchs that people can ask their legislators to support. And
planting of milkweed, the planting of not just milkweed, but also pollinator plants, butterflies. Butterflies drink nectar. It's the caterpillar that eats the milkweed plant. So we have to sustain both. We have to, sustain the adult butterfly and then also the caterpillar.
Important.
But having plants as organic as you can and multiples of them, because once a butterfly lays eggs, it will lay hundreds of eggs and those plants will be eaten down to the nubs.
Yeah, so, it's such a great experience. And when my kids were little, we had butterflies hatching out in the garden and they just loved watching the chrysalis and the butterfly emerge and, seeing the caterpillars.
We do. And in our butterfly pavilion, you can see the whole life cycle. And depending on how many butterflies are populating the butterfly pavilion at the time and what species they are, it's incredible to see all the different types.
Very good. And I have that bill information before Congress. It's called the Monarch Action, Recovery, and Conservation of Habitat Act. And obviously, preserving their habitat is another important issue.
It's huge. And in Mexico, there's a large movement by a wonderful group that is going in there, and they are trying to save the trees that the monarchs roost in over the winter. And what they're doing with the indigenous people there is they are providing pellet burning stoves so that they're not chopping down the trees that the butterflies are roosting in. And that organization is called Ecolife Foundation.
There's a county cheer of the monarch butterflies too, isn't there? Is that something that volunteers can participate in?
Yes, there's a monarch watch program. We used to have a tagging program, but that has been put on hold for the last couple of years. There are a lot of things. The Xerces Society, many organizations are trying to help bring the monarch back.
Very good.
Well, the biggest I think I can say is education. I think that's the biggest, because people want to do the right thing, but they just don't know.
Yeah, exactly. And then planting lots of that native milkweed, as we've talked about, is also so important. Well, Pam, I'm going to let you have the last word today. Listeners, if you've just tuned in, we have been speaking with Pam Meisner. She's the Director of Operations and Programs at the Water Conservation Garden at Cuyamaca College right here in Rancho San Diego in East County. And she's also known as Miss Smarty Plants. What else would you like our listeners, our audience, to know about saving monarch butterflies that we maybe haven't already touched on?
Well, the best thing I can do is I just want to put a shout out there to all of my Earth heroes. We know that you guys want to do the right thing. And one of the right things to do is to plant the milkweed. It's to save our water. And it's to, always take care of our planet. Always take care of our planet.
Wise words. Well, I want to thank you for taking the time to join us today on the East County Magazine radio show on KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso. And if you tuned in late, we will be posting a podcast with video of this interview on eastcountymagazine.org.
It's been my pleasure. Thank you.
You are listening to KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, broadcasting from the desert to the sea.
Michael Martinez, a 69-year-old man classified by the state of California as a sexually violent predator, will be released and placed in a home on Running M Road in Borrego Springs. San Diego Superior Court Judge David Gill approved the placement on July 22nd despite strenuous opposition from local residents. Martinez was convicted of four separate offenses between 1979 and 2004 in San Diego and Los Angeles counties, including child molestation, annoying or molesting a child, and lewd or lascivious acts on a child under age 14. He has been diagnosed with both pedophilia and personality disorders.
Judge Gill said he visited the site and was impressed with the work of Liberty Healthcare, the agency set to supervise Martinez under a conditional release program. Liberty Healthcare claims to have supervised 55 sexually violent predators over the past 20 years and says none have reoffended. In addition to GPS monitoring, the SVPs are monitored with staff contacts and regularly scheduled polygraph testing, Times of San Diego reports. Borrego Springs resident John Stillman, who lives across the street from the proposed property, called Gill's decision horribly disappointing and said it feels like a violation of our community fabric. He called Judge Gill's statements insulting and offensive. Stillman told Times of San Diego that residents would continue to fight the release, which is slated to occur in 45 days. He noted that a homeschooling program is being operated just a few houses away. Regarding the quality of Martinez's supervision, Stillman said the judge puts a lot of faith in Liberty Healthcare that we don't put in Liberty Healthcare. Martinez is the latest in a string of sexually violent predators proposed for placement in East County. San Diego's supervisors and state legislators have tried various means to stop the placements, but the ultimate decision rests with the state of California and the courts. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Miriam Raftery.
For the Daily Yonder and Public News Service, this is the news from rural America. Those who live in rural America saw their disposable income drop, on average, twice as much proportionately as city folk in the past year.
After all your bills are paid, what's left over in your bank account for rural household debt shrank by 40%.
David Peters at Iowa State University analyzed data from the U.S. Bureau of Labor Statistics. The biggest factor for rural residents? The high cost of fuel.
Rural households have to travel further for work, for school, shopping for daily needs.
Across America, people are buying EVs, electric vehicles, at a record pace. That's still only about 6% of the cars sold, but more charging stations could supercharge that. Charge West is installing fast charging stations every 50 miles along scenic and rural highways in 8 western states.
It's an opportunity for us to imagine electrified transportation fully and to know that we can travel with range confidence to our destinations and be able to return.
Tammy Bostick is with Utah's Clean Cities Coalition, a group of 21 city, state, and federal partners. It's the first fast-charging project launched with funding from the $2.5 billion infrastructure law. In the Bluegrass State, the University of Kentucky is celebrating year one of a unique scholarship. Here's Anya Slepian.
Housed in the College of Agriculture, Food, and Environment, the scholarship, which is the first of its kind in the region, supports LGBTQ-identifying students. Working with other employees of the College of Agriculture, Seth Riker was the driving force behind creating the fund.
Speaking as a closeted kid who grew up on a rural Kentucky farm, I know how important it is to share this message that I needed 20 years ago, and that is, you are not alone and you belong here.
The scholarship and the message it sends is especially important given the challenge of feeding the world in a changing climate, according to Riker.
It is absolutely inexcusable to have bigotry and ignorance impeding tomorrow's leaders.
I'm Anya Slepian.
A majority of U.S. novels are set in New York City, and that's an issue for educators using books to help students explore their own culture. Dr. Shea Parton is the founder of Literacy in Place.
Because story is identity, and identity is story.
Parton runs an online archive of rural literature. She wants more middle and high school curricula that speaks directly to young students in the heartland. Her message resonated with a classroom of teachers in training at Morehead State University. According to Professor Allison Ruby, her students left Parton's lecture more motivated to empower their future students with rural stories.
Many of them said that they really wish they had read more literature that represented their hometowns in a more positive light.
For the Daily Yonder and Public News Service, I'm Roz Brown. For more rural stories, visit dailyyonder.com.
It is no secret that 911 medical calls are sometimes not placed for life-threatening emergencies. Yet for lack of any other system, those moments are often forced to be treated with urgent responses, such as ambulance rides to emergency rooms. Such has been the case in El Cajon, but residents there will soon have another option for medical care. Upon approval from the San Diego County of Emergency Services on June 24th, the city may now move forward with a nurse navigator pilot program that will refer appropriate callers to a triage nurse line instead of 911 dispatch. Steve Swaney, fire chief at Heartland Fire and Rescue, estimates about 20% of calls to their 911 dispatcher will now go through the 24/7 Nurse Navigator program, or roughly 3,500 callers. In an update given to the El Cajon City Council at their July 12th meeting, Swaney said, quote, "Now they get the appropriate care. They can get into a doctor's appointment because they'll allocate some slots for us and get them the care that they need instead of ending up at the ER. Mayor Bill Wells and Councilmember Gary Kendrick were absent, but the other three council members were in agreement that dispatching the correct level of resources to callers is vital. They unanimously approved $300,000 to be spent on the pilot program, covering the setup of the connection to the call center and a 90-day implementation period, and essentially subscribing to a certain amount of calls with them. Yet in the long run, the program will provide some buffer and savings to the city on things like increasing demand for new ambulances, fire trucks, and staff, plus their contracts with emergency teams like American Medical Response." Councilmember Phil Ortiz reflected that, quote, "Instead of having a fire truck and an ambulance respond to a call that is not life-threatening, we can triage it through this nurse. And they can dig a little bit deeper as to what are the symptoms, what's going on. This redirect is in no way a refusal of responding to dire or painful medical needs, but under the program, certain 911 callers who would benefit more from care in a non-emergency healthcare setting will be able to follow that route, improving both their quality of care and streamlining the abilities of emergency responders. However, participation is optional, and no one will be turned away from emergency services if they so choose." The city's staff report states that, quote, "The long-term goal is to improve the patient's long-term healthcare literacy, reduce their reliance on 911 for non-emergency needs, and improve their health outcomes by facilitating their access to primary care. The nurses will be based at a call center in Texas ran by Access to Care, a branch of Global Medical Response focused on innovating the delivery of medical care. No other California city has used Access to Care's Nurse Navigator program. According to the Access to Care website, nurses deliver through their triage system, quote, the right resource at the right time in the right setting to achieve the right outcome at the right cost. Using local protocols and physicians' guidance, this team can learn more about what people are experiencing and guide them to the appropriate level of care, even by setting up transportation to services using a rideshare app like Uber or Lyft. Indeed, Councilmember Michelle Mitchell saw the impact of people's lack of transportation during her time as an EMT. As she voiced her support of the program, she said, quote, "Not to denigrate that person for not having transportation, but you take a unit out of service to take a person to an emergency room for something that could have been taken care of in clinic." She continued, quote, "It leaves our paramedics and our EMTs to do a higher level of care versus these low-level calls constantly going because they will burn you out." Councilmember Steve Goble also noted that Heartland Fire and Rescue is a Class 1 ISO agency, meaning they are rated in the top 1% nationally by the Insurance Services Office. To Fire Chief Swaney, he said encouragingly, "If anyone can pull this off, you can." To learn more about the pilot program, visit www.access2care.net/services/nurse-navigation. That's Access to Care with the 2 as a numeral. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Elijah McKee.
We're on the road in East County, visiting some amazing towns and meeting some incredible people across our region. Welcome to another adventure on East County Magazine's On the Road.
This is Hayden Parsley, on the road in Hucumba Hot Springs for East County Magazine. You can take a trip into California's past at the Desert View Tower, a quirky and whimsical relic of the past that is still open to the public here in San Diego's East County. Located just off Interstate 8 at the Incapa exit, the tower is poised on a rocky overlook surrounded by desert on all sides. Built in the 1920s by Bert Vaughn, a real estate tycoon who owned much of Hucumba, this 70-foot watchtower has become a tourist attraction and a local landmark on the outskirts of the small town known as Hucumba Hot Springs. Originally built to commemorate the area's rough pre-highway history, the tower houses a small museum filled with artifacts and oddities of California's history, including our region's Native American, Spanish, and pioneer past. The top floor of the tower is an observation deck, with a coin-fed telescope that provides a breathtaking view of Imperial Valley and the Anza Borrego Desert, though now somewhat marred by a wind farm.
In 1950, a gift shop was added around the base of the tower. The shop still operates today and is filled with an eclectic mix of items such as geodes, gems, and minerals, vintage postcards, historic and travel books on our region, arts and crafts items such as handmade Tecate tiles, onyx bookends, musical instruments, carved animal sculptures, and more. Roaming this area of the tower are the owner's many friendly dogs that add to the rustic charm of the location. You can also get a workout pumping a player piano while listening to old-time tunes. While I was there, the wind was gusting. It was a bit chilly and I wished I had a better coat when I reached the top. The owner says this is atypical though, and that it is warm and sunny most days. The proprietor, Ben Schultz, has many colorful stories on East County's history, culture, and colorful characters, having operated the site for many years. Boulder Park at the Desert View Tower was created in 1933 by an unemployed engineer, Merle Ratcliffe, who was out of work during the Great Depression. He sculpted reptiles and fanciful animals out of the huge stone boulders. I didn't get a chance to tour these, which will be an adventure for another time.
A new ballot measure to support arts education will go before California voters in November. Proposition 28 would require that 1% of school funding go toward arts and music education. The measure does not provide new money, but rather directs districts to prioritize existing funds. Richard DeHaven is with Children's Playtime Productions in Palm Desert, which has offered in-school and after-school children's theater programs for 27 years.
Just as much as math teaches them 2 plus 2 and how to get along in life and how to balance their checkbooks, the arts teach them how to have empathy, how to be better people, how to have confidence and interact. Confidence is a huge one.
Opponents favor a focus on reading, writing, and math and say the measure would limit school districts' flexibility, especially in tough economic times. Prop 28 would apply to all K-12 public schools, including charter schools. It would concentrate more funding in low-income schools. It would not raise taxes, but would direct about $800 million to $1 billion a year in existing funds toward the arts. DeHaven says that he's seen arts education improve test scores, reduce bullying, and encourage further academic pursuits.
What we've noticed, the kids who are exposed to the arts do much better in school and tend to go to college more often than those who are not exposed to the arts.
Under Prop 28, schools with more than 500 students would have to spend 80% of their arts budget on staff and 20% on supplies and training. The group Californians for Arts and Music Education in Public Schools, which is campaigning for the measure, estimates that 90% of elementary schools, 96% of middle schools, and 72% of high schools in the Golden State fail to provide a high-quality course of arts education. For California News Service, I'm Suzanne Potter. Find our 8 trust indicators to support transparency and accuracy at publicnewsservice.org.
The family of an elderly man missing in East County's mountain area are asking for help to find him. 76-year-old Terry Robert Hughes went for a walk near Pine Hills, south of Julian, on Monday, July 17th, and never came home. He was last seen wearing blue basketball shorts, a white t-shirt, and a hat. He is a white male with light hair, standing over 6 feet tall, but walks hunched over, making him appear much shorter, around 5 feet 2 inches. Search and rescue crews have been combing roadways in the area and have asked for public help to locate the missing man. His family asked visitors to the Julian or Pine Hills areas to report any sightings of Terry Robert Hughes. Hikers in the vicinity are also asked to be on the lookout for the missing man, who has Parkinson's disease, according to his sister-in-law, Carolyn Miller. If you see anyone matching the description of the missing man or have any information on his whereabouts, please call 911. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Henry Migala.
This is Miriam Raftery, producer of the East County Magazine radio show. If you would like to be the media, here's your opportunity. We're looking for some more talented volunteers for our East County Magazine radio show. So if you've got radio experience or just a great voice, or if you'd like to get experience writing scripts or special reports for the East County Magazine radio show on KNSJ, we'd like to hear from you. You can call us at 619-698-7617 or send an email to editor@eastcountymagazine.org. We're your community media, bringing you news from our region that reflects the public interest, not special interests. East County Magazine continues to be recognized for our high-quality reporting on news in the public interest in San Diego's inland region. On July 21st, the Society of Professional Journalists in San Diego held their annual Journalism Awards presentation. East County Magazine received 3 awards, bringing our total number of professional journalism awards to 140 since our inception in 2008. The latest awards, all for daily reporting, include a second place in the education category for an article by Henry Migala and Miriam Raftery on protests over school vaccine and mask mandates, an article that also included an interview with a top doctor at Rady Children's Hospital addressing parents' concerns and risks of COVID-19 to children. Elijah McKee received a second place award in the multicultural reporting category for his coverage of the Helping El Cajon Refugees Group, assisting newly arrived Afghan refugees in El Cajon, also highlighting the urgent need for additional resources. Migala and Raftery also earned a third place award for their series on the continuing battle waged by East County communities fighting to block placement of sexually violent predators in neighborhoods with children. You can read all of these stories and more at eastcountymagazine.org. Nonprofit public interest news. This concludes today's edition of the East County Magazine radio show. We extend our appreciation to the Heartland Coalition, our parent nonprofit, and to KNSJ 89.1 FM, broadcasting from the heart of East County in Descanso. We also thank the musicians who provided music for our show, Laura Preble, Jim Hannibal, Corey Clement, Giovanni Galicia and the Smashing Beats, Wooden Ambulance, Dusty Summer Road, A.K. Jewel, Brian Boyko, Royalty Free Music, Frank Nora, Kevin McLeod, April's Dance from the Smart Sound Solo Simplicity Collection, Turco, Nomads of the Silk Road, Blues 3 Music, and Pond 5. If you would like to underwrite or sponsor the East County Magazine radio show or get involved as a volunteer on our public interest news show, please contact editor@eastcountymagazine.org. We'll be back soon with another edition of the East County Magazine radio show. This is Miriam Raftery, producer of the East County Magazine radio show. If you would like to be the media, here's your opportunity. We're looking for some more talented volunteers for our East County Magazine radio show. So if you've got radio experience or just a great voice, or if you'd like to get experience writing scripts or special reports for the East County Magazine radio show on KNSJ, we'd like to hear from you. You can call us at 619-698-7617. Or send an email to editor@eastcountymagazine.org. We're your community media, bringing you news from our region that reflects the public interest, not special interests.